email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's life, Jim, but not as we know it. Has alien life been discovered? Scientists using the James Webb even Space Telescope have obtained what they call the strongest signs yet of possible life beyond our solar system. To tell us more, we're joined by lecturer in physics in TU Dublin, Kevin Nolan. Good afternoon, Kevin.
How are you, Ray? Thanks.
Good. This is exciting, or is it?
It is. Oh, yeah. This is a very exciting discovery. Yeah. Yes, indeed. So what they've discovered is this material in the atmosphere of another planet called dimethyl sulfide, which is actually the smell of the sea or the smell of seaweed. It's made by phytoplankton on Earth. Now, phytoplankton are really important on Earth because they're at the bottom of the food chain. They make half our oxygen of the atmosphere, and even with this sulfur compound, regulate maybe cloud formation. We've discovered 1,000 times more of it on this planet.
Right. And where is this planet?
Now, it's 100 light years plus away, 124 light years away.
Will you try and explain that to people?
Yeah, it's very hard. So we're talking thousands of solar systems distance away. A light year is 10 trillion kilometres. So if the Voyager space probe was to get there, it would take maybe about 1 to 2 million years.
Ah, right.
Travelling at 17 kilometres a second. So... So we're not going there anytime soon.
No. But it's exciting because it's the eternal question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there other life forms out there?
Now, we don't have to travel to these planets to analyse them. That's what James Webb is about. It can analyse the structure of atmospheres of planets that are thousands of light years away. So sophisticated are the instruments on it. And that's what's exciting about this. We couldn't do this before James Webb Space Telescope. And here we've asked the question of a planet, might there be some biosignature evidence suggesting even microbial life? And this is the first time we've come up with an answer.
So the telescope sends out a beam. This is overly simplistic now.
Yeah.
And certain elements would reflect that beam in a certain...
Not quite.
No,
well, but you're right in as much as... when the planet moves in front of its sun, the sun's light shines through the atmosphere.
Then
it picks up the signature as to what the atmosphere absorbed. And we see the signatures, by the way, also importantly for water vapour. We think there's an ocean. We think this planet is an ocean-wide planet, heavier than Earth. It's got carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's got methane. And then this very important... ingredient.
When I heard this on Morning Ireland this morning, I was thinking that maybe there could be a planet out there that's at the beginning of their civilization.
Mm. Well, this is around an old star. So, I mean, the thing is that there's phytoplankton on Earth, but there's us. And we are only at the... Like, this is an unbelievably hard measurement to make.
Right.
So all we're kind of... And some scientists are even a bit sceptical of saying we've discovered maybe evidence of phytoplankton on this planet, if it is life-forming.
Did I read this correctly? That this same team in Cambridge University said there was water on this particular planet before.
Indeed, yeah.
And then it proved to be not water, but methane.
Well, no. We do think that this planet has an
water.
Ocean.
Okay.
Yeah. There are a new type of planet called a Hycean planet, heavier than Earth, but we think with an ocean at least as big as Earth, maybe deeper even.
Right.
So, we can never be 100% certain in science. That's fine, and we have to continue doing an analysis. But the general feeling is that this might be a planet with an ocean atmosphere, a hydrogen atmosphere, and then this material or biosignature in the atmosphere.
Okay.
But we have to even still do more work. To put this in context, we've got what's called a 99% confidence level, a 3 standard deviation confidence. This is normally what you need to say that something's really sure. But some scientists are calling for higher standard of measurement around the level of what you would say for something to be pharmaceutically pure, for example.
Uh-huh.
So we're at the very fine edge here. This isn't a guess. This is very good measurements, but we just don't like claiming it all in one go.
I'm wondering about just the logistics of science and scientific research and the funding thereof.
Yeah.
And do people have to keep coming up with advances to maintain their funding?
Indeed. I mean, for every mission like Webb that's proposed, maybe 10 to 15 were rejected, and they're all amazing.
Okay.
So the thing is that the actual standards that society put in there through the academic process and ESA, the European Space Agency, is very, very high. And even then, when these instruments are built, like the person who discovered this would have been one of maybe 100 groups applying for time on this.
Okay.
And they are at the very top of their game.
Uh-huh.
So it's really, really competitive. This is very good. CERN level science has been done on James Webb. So it's not just somebody with a lucky shot and found a planet. This would have been in the making for years.
I think people would be interested in this. So there is this amazing telescope, the James Webb Space Telescope, and then you can get time on it.
Indeed.
But you have to apply.
You do.
And you have to go through some rigorous process.
Very rigorous.
Uh-huh.
Very rigorous. I mean, there'll be only one or two astronomers in Ireland, Professor Tom Ray and Dias, who's actually a main person involved in Dias. In fact, he built part of the instrument that discovered this. this. So there's a little Irish connection there.
Right.
But he would be one of the few people who would get time on the James Webb. So you'd be talking about very, very prestigious groups like this group in Cambridge. And they have to have a very strong case to even start the search.
I suppose people at home are going, if you can spot that there's this dimethyl sulfide and dimethyl disulfide on the planet, why can't you spot if there's bigger life forms?
Yeah, because we're not even seeing the planet. It's so small, we're not spotting it. Right. All we're doing is using very sophisticated techniques to see the star blink. And actually, in the moment, it's fractions of a second between it. It actually is not passing by its star to when it's passing its star. We're trying to use our telescopes to see the sun shine through its atmosphere. Uh-huh. As somebody said, it's actually trying, like with your human eye, to actually see details on the thick of an apple skin on an apple. This type of thing.
So
you know?
is it how light is reflected or refracted
passing through.
The,
indeed,
aha,
yeah. So, right. Like, we use this all the time. Even, it's called spectroscopy. So, you know, if you shine light through any gas and then you measure it on the other side with a thing called a spectroscope, you can actually work out what's in the atmosphere. It's a line of sight effect. But it's amazingly powerful. So, like, Webb can analyse the atmosphere of a planet 1,000 light years away in an hour. I mean, that's amazing. And we've discovered, like, just to date, 7,000 planets around those stars. We're launching further telescopes in the space, one called Plato, again with Irish involvement, next year, just to try and find Earth-like planets around Sun-like stars, and actually launching it in 2 years' time. So this is only the beginning
so
of this.
So it's K218b.
Yes.
And I see that at one stage it was called the most habitable known world beyond the solar system. Mm. K218b.
So K2 is Kepler's probe that discovered its second mission, and then the 18th star it looked at. And we name exoplanets A as the first discovered, B as the second discovered. We can't see it, but it's actually in the night sky tonight in the constellation of Leo.
So and it's in the solar system.
It has its own solar system. Just two planets we know so far on this one. You know,
And its sun is it smaller than our sun?
It's called a red dwarf, So in fact, this star planet is very close, but it's still in what we call the Goldilocks zone.
Yes.
Where it's not too hot, not too cold. So that's why we believe there's liquid water there. And this biomarker, like, we don't know of any other process in nature that makes dimethyl sulfide other than protoplankton or phytoplankton. So this is we're very excited about it.
Final question then. When was that organism on Earth?
Well, it's one of the
original ones. Yeah. So when Earth was formed, this was one of the first.
Yeah. Although the only thing I'll say is this photosynthesizes, so that's quite an advanced life on Earth. So it's not like as if we're talking about basically, you know, a progenitor organism. So if it's photosynthesizing, it's a plant. And that's quite an advance in life. Now, the thing I'll just say is, I always feel to be beating this wagon. Discovering microbes is like discovering how nature formed things like rock into life.
Yeah.
So it's only the start.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's what I was thinking.
If we discover life there, then it might suggest there's a universe teeming with life. It gives us big existential questions to ask beyond
that. But it could be that they're at the beginning of their process.
It could be.
Process.
Yeah, yeah. But there could be more because it's not a very young planet. And this might be all we're able to discover right now. So, I mean, this is you know, we're not coming along and saying this is all there might be there. But we're not saying it's life either.
It's exciting. I can see you're excited. With all the animals in the world communicating with whistles, clicks, songs, vibrations, etc., and we humans still cannot communicate with them, my question is, if aliens do show up, how will we communicate with them? Miles and Doolan.
That's a brilliant question. And you know, something we don't really know. I mean, again, films like Contact with Carl Sagan were wonderful about that. He used to say mathematics is the universal language. But, you know, the thing is, I think, a brilliant question and should maybe even steer us towards really thinking about the fact that we don't understand things like intelligence in other mammals. Because the questions of life in the universe, really, we should steer them back towards us and say, how do we engage with our life? And I think many astrobiologists and biologists discuss this question at conferences to say, you know, how it's a brilliant question.
Well, they're saying, because we read it out a few weeks ago, that AI now, we're not too far away from AI allowing us to speak to animals, that they will take their barks, analyse them and deliver it in English or French or German or whatever language.
We'll be able to attribute meaning to patterns, basically it. And it's probably true. I mean, AI, even in finding exoplanets, loathe it or love it, it's going to influence all of this.
Well, particularly if you're getting all this data coming in from a telescope, it can process it.
Yeah, millions of times faster than humans. So basically, if there's, you know, for example, in SETI, which is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, by analysing millions of radio waves that are coming from space, most of them are natural. I mean, AI may even be used there, or is already being used there by the SETI Institute to try and see can they find any kind of patterns,
yes,
yeah, within it.
That we didn't spot.
Oh yeah, AI is going to be big in astrophysics going forward.
Right. Yeah. Kevin Nolan, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming in. Thanks,
Thank
Kevin.
You. Cheers.